What have you done to be able to, you know, buy a nice house and, you know, pay the bills and that kind of thing?
Well, really, I owe it to poetry. I have been thinking recently about why I got interested in poetry and how I got interested. When I was in high school, I wrote short stories, and I was always kind of interested in plays. And I think my earliest interest in poetry was at Harper College when this poet, Alan Dugan, came to read poetry. And he was one of the Yale younger poets, which meant he was under 40. And I was very impressed. Well, first of all, his language was extremely modern. At one point, he talked about one of his ancestors, old Billy Dugan, got shot in the ass during the Civil War. And I thought, you can't say that in a poem. But I realized, you know, it just impressed me. And I thought, well, I can do that.
Demotic speech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, some of these things seem funny, but when I think back, I think they were important. When I took typing class, I broke my finger playing football. So she gave me an F, which wasn't a very nice thing in high school. I never could type. So my typing speed, I always joked, my typing speed was one page a day. A poem. that was all I could type.
Which turns out to be a chapbook like this, one whole page when you fold it up, right?
Yeah, that's right. And it's kind of a joke, but it's really true. But my handwriting was extremely good. And people could read, I made my handwriting so that people could read it. Because I couldn't type. I could type, but it was two fingers, and I was extremely slow. And in those days, that was before, you know, those correctable tapes and things. So you had to be really accurate. So I don't know. I'm not sure how much influence that had. But somewhere along the line, I decided. I think by the time I went to Syracuse, I decided, oh yeah, I think I want to be a poet. So I took English literature. I never took creative writing, but I took English literature because I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll hedge my bets and maybe I'll have to be a teacher. But I never taught. One of the teachers I had was Delmore Schwartz, who was mid-20th century. No, I wouldn't even say mid. He had a very successful career when he was young. He was younger than Eliot, but he was like a rival. He was considered a rival to Eliot. This guy was, for some reason, was really famous. I look at his poetry now and I think, yeah, I like it, but you know, it doesn't match up to Eliot for sure. But anyhow, he said, at one point he said, he taught a course on Yeats and a course on Joyce and a course on Proust. I think Proust and Eliot or something, anyhow. Covered them all. Well, just covered those four. And that was several courses. He was a brilliant conversationalist. Absolutely brilliant. He would lecture. I think they were all seminars, so they were like one day a week, and you spent a lot of time reading. So, I don't know if I mentioned, but he said the best writers don't take creative writing courses, which is certainly not the case, but that's but at the time, when I was 21 or something, I thought, well, that might be true.
You don't think that's true?
I don't think it's true now. No, not really. I think that most of us have to unlearn a lot of what we were taught or what we learned.
And they don't have to unlearn that in creative writing workshops?
Oh, they have more to unlearn.
That's what I'm saying.
For sure. But just taking a creative writing workshop or even specializing it doesn't mean you're going to turn out to be a bad poet or
right.
bad writer.
Right, right. For some reason, I am not getting the connection between your love of poetry and the riches you were able to accumulate to afford a place like this.
Okay, well, so here I'm sort of self-employed, and I came across this artist's co-op in Vancouver called Intermedia. Now, it was funded by the Canada Council to an extent that these days would seem unbelievable. It would probably be to the tune of, you know, these days it'd probably be $800,000 a year.
Budget, and yeah. Operating budget.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sort of was loosely based on the ideas of McLuhan, but also on the idea that science, engineering, and art all had similarities. And so, even though there was no formal membership per se, there were scientists, there were engineers, and there were artists of all stripes. And we had a building, a four-story downtown warehouse to work out of. And people would flow through there. And then once a year, for a week, we got a show at the Vancouver Art Gallery. And they were always very innovative, and people were doing collaborations. A lot of everything was, not everything, but a lot of stuff was collaborative. So at some point, we bought a printing press because the poets wanted a printing press. So we bought a printing press. It was both very sophisticated and very primitive. It was called a Ronio, and it was like a Gestetner printing press, but it had an electronic scanner, which would cut stencils for the mimeograph machine. And it was low quality, but you could deal very quickly and easily with images and get, you know, passable reproduction. So right off, I did a book, because at the time I was going around to stores and selling leather goods. I thought, well, you know, I can sell these stores. I can sell them a book. And of course, I picked the right stores because there were no other books for sale in these stores. Mm-hmm. If you went into the local bookstore, there are hundreds and thousands of books. And why somebody would pick yours, you know, the chances were slim that they would pick yours. But in a craft store, you're the only book of poetry.
So you're talking books like Openings or Summer Song?
Yeah.
Openings.
Both of them, yeah.
Yeah.
And so we for a lot of, for quite a while, I was kind of a mentor in the sense that I would show people. It was a do-it-yourself kind of situation. I would show people how to do it. You could buy paper offcuts from the paper company. You know, you'd go down to where the cutter was, and they had all these piles of paper that had been cut off at odd shapes and sizes and qualities of paper and color, and they'd sell it to you by the pound, really cheap. So the paper was cheap. The whole process was very inexpensive. Actually, it was the day of the quick printer. You go to the corner print shop, and they had a little offset press and a quick plate maker. It served the function that, you know, copier places later served. So at a certain point, let's see what happened there. Intermedia was a cooperative, and at a certain point, one of the things that it did was it showed artists how to kind of set up their own operations. And some of them were quasi-business. We learned sort of by doing how to administrate. So Intermedia spun off a whole bunch of studios and enterprises. And one of the last to go was what we called Intermedia Press. So by that time I had two partners actually in Intermedia Press. And we started publishing chapbooks and a small magazine.
Who are these people?
John McDonald and Henry Rappaport. And well, there's a lot of good stories. But anyhow, we started Intermedia Press, and up to that point, while it was still at Intermedia, at the Intermedia premises, part of my role was as a mentor and, you know, showing people how to do it, basically. I still do that. And then when we bought this offset press, we rented a storefront, a really dingy, tiny storefront downtown. And
what address or intersection?
It'd be at Richards and Camby. It's not there anymore. In the pioneer days and early days, and still around, you can see them around, you'd have a house, and then they would build a storefront in front of the house that went out to the, you know, out to the sidewalk.
Right.
And that's what this was. So we had the basement of the house and the storefront.